Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. The original topic for today was this, to look at the association between food insecurity and mortality among injection drug users. But I think what I'm going to do is tell you a little bit of a more expanded story in terms of the current evidence that we have and what we know about food insecurity among people living with HIV. Whoops. So I'll just start by saying I have no financial commercial interest to disclose. For those of you who have never been to Vancouver, Vancouver is just a couple hours north from Seattle on the west coast of Canada. And it's an absolutely gorgeous city. We always say that you can go surfing by the day, skiing at night. We have fantastic urban forests with old growth trees, and it's truly kind of a nature's paradise. Also very fine dining. It's become a city well known for its lifestyle. So much so that the average Vancouverite loves to boast about the fact that the Economist Intelligence Unit ranked Vancouver the most livable city in the world for about 9 years running. However, there's also another side to this. It is the most livable, but that's if you can afford it. As the Economist also pointed out, it's the most expensive city to live in North America, and that's continuing to expand exponentially, certainly with our current housing prices. And adding to that, the United Nations, the UNFPA came to Vancouver to actually profile the difficulties that Vancouver was having in terms of this juxtaposition between affluence and, on the other side, a growing pocket of extreme poverty. So Vancouver, and in particular a neighbourhood that's now infamously known as the Vancouver Downtown East Side, has the lowest per capita income than any other neighborhood in all of Canada. And so this is right in the center, like a bubble within Vancouver. In addition to that, in this particular neighborhood, we have the highest per capita number of injection drug users. It's really the injection drug use capital of North America. Okay, so our story starts in 1999, and this is at a time where everyone was all excited, of course, about the advent of triple combination therapy, and it was being rolled out extensively throughout Canada, in particular in British Columbia, where we have not only socialized and free medical care for everyone, but for people living with HIV, prescription and all care and support related to HIV are entirely free of cost. So when we started to look at food insecurity at this time at around 1,200, looking at a cohort of people living with HIV and receiving antiretroviral therapy across the province, we were really shocked to find that 50% of them, or just over 50% of them, were food insecure. And among those, 21% were hungry. About 10 years later, we had the opportunity to look at this figure again. And to our surprise, while this isn't the exact same population, it was from the same population sample, a slightly larger sample or slightly smaller sample size. And we were starting to become concerned that we saw the prevalence of food insecurity potentially increasing in this population, including the prevalence of hunger. And then what I just wanted to emphasize is, of course, as many of you are probably aware, the issue with measuring food insecurity is often in the multiple tools that exist to measure it. So this was really using the same tool, which at that time was the Radomir-Cornell tool. And just to put into perspective, the prevalence of food insecurity that we are seeing among people living with HIV was 6 times higher than what we found in the general population in Canada. And the factors that were associated with food insecurity among people living with HIV in those two studies were pretty much identical. So low socioeconomic status, unstable housing, history of mental illness, and in particular history of illicit drug use, but in addition to that, especially injection drug use. Looking then as well at data among people who were starting antiretroviral therapy in the year 1999 and following them for 8 years prospectively, we found that there was a strong association between food insecurity and increased risk of mortality. Knowing then that food insecurity was most prevalent among injection drug users, and in Vancouver, the issue of injection drug users is really dominates a lot of our public health discussions, and in Canada in general, especially given that we have North America's only safer supervised injection site where addicts can come in and, with the assistance of nurses, can ensure that that any injections that they take, the drugs they bring in themselves, but they are able to inject using clean syringes, clean injection equipment, and to this date, not one overdose has taken place since the advent of Insight or the Safe Injection facility, and there have been upwards of 75 peer-reviewed scientific publications describing the various public health impacts of this. So then looking at hunger specifically, we are noticing that this is really a highly neglected issue. And among this particular sample of HIV-negative injection drug users, we found that 65% were severely food insecure or reporting that they were hungry, had not been able to meet their daily subsistence needs due to lack of finances. Furthermore, looking then at a cohort of HIV-positive injection drug users, we found a strong association between food insecurity or severe food insecurity, so hunger, and increased risk sexual risk behavior, and that this association was statistically significant for both men and women, but particularly pronounced among women in this setting. So then coming to the original objective of the study that I wanted to share with you today, we then wanted to kind of zero in on the injection drug user population to get a better understanding, knowing now that previous studies in Vancouver and certainly in San Francisco, led by Sherry Weiser and her team, had found that food insecurity is associated with a whole slew of adverse clinical outcomes, whether that's late treatment initiation, poor immunological status, poor virological response to antiretroviral therapy, poor adherence, etc. And the question that we wanted to answer was, we know that the prevalence of severe food insecurity and hunger is extremely high, in particular among this injection drug user population, and is the impact of that any higher than what it would be among normal people living with HIV, or among non-injection drug using people living with HIV? Okay, so just to give you again a little bit of background, in British Columbia, everyone is able to access, if you're HIV positive and clinically eligible, according to international guidelines, you're able to access antiretroviral treatment and all of its supports entirely free of charge to the patient. And the quality of our database is actually unique globally. There's only one other database that has the same rigor of clinical and laboratory collection around people living with HIV receiving antiretroviral therapy, and that's in Switzerland. And the reason for that is that all antiretroviral drugs in the province are centrally procured and distributed, such that when a person becomes diagnosed and is positive, their care is immediately followed up by a team, and when they're clinically eligible, the distribution of the antiretroviral drugs and all of the testing is managed centrally from Vancouver. So what it means is that prospectively, from the mid-1980s, we have a very rich understanding of how people have been responding to different either public health changes in the environment or changes in the advent of new regimens, etc. And a lot of the scientific evidence that's come out of Vancouver have actually influenced and continue to influence all the international health guidelines as a consequence of the quality of this data set. So, as I just mentioned, physicians will complete a drug request form that acts as a legal prescription. And at the same time, patients will, if they choose to, and if they would like to, certainly their care is not contingent upon this, but they have the opportunity to fill out a very brief sociodemographic survey. Thank you. I should mention that I came off of a red-eye flight, so I've also had approximately 30 minutes of sleep in the last 24 hours. Okay, so an ethics for this study was obtained from the University of British Columbia and Providence Healthcare, which is one of the leading health service authorities in the area. So this particular study is then looking at HIV-positive adults who report having used injection drugs within the last 12 months. And our primary explanatory variable was food insecurity, and we did a separate analysis to look at hunger as well, because we hypothesized that that both hunger and food insecurity would be independently associated with mortality. And we assumed that hunger would be more strongly associated with mortality than food insecurity. We looked at a whole slew of different potential secondary explanatory variables that we hypothesized might be confounding the relationship between food insecurity and mortality, and our primary outcome variable was all-cause mortality. So we just did some basic descriptive statistics initially, bivariate analysis followed by a cost proportional hazard confounder model, and we built two models in order to respectively explore the relationship between food insecurity and mortality, and then hunger and mortality. So 254 HIV-positive injection drug users were included in this study. They received the food insecurity or food security scale questionnaire at baseline, and 13.3 years after follow-up is when we started to evaluate survival in the cohort. We found that approximately 70% were food insecure, so that's very consistent actually with the figures that we have now in terms of our understanding of food insecurity among injection drug users and non-drug users. The vast majority are men. Quite a significant proportion are Aboriginals. Here you call them American Indians, I believe. In Canada, it's Aboriginals or First Nations. And that's unfortunately very characteristic of the injection drug user population, is very high prevalence of use among our Aboriginal population. BMI was not an issue in this population, which we were surprised by. We actually assumed that we assumed that one of the main mechanisms by which hunger might influence mortality would be through low BMI. So in our bivariate analysis, we found that both food insecurity and hunger were strongly associated with mortality. And in particular, then, when we looked at a confounder model controlling for all potential variables that could confound the relationship, we again found that people who were food insecure, reported being food insecure, had an almost twofold increased likelihood of dying at the end of the follow-up period. But to our surprise, hunger was no longer significant. So the separate model that we built looking at the relationship between hunger and mortality was not significant. So this is kind of contrary to our intuitive understanding and our deductive assumption around what might be happening in this population. So based on the scale that we used, really, we had to look back at the answers that people were questioning to try and understand what could possibly be happening here. And the two possible explanations that we have for this association between food insecurity and mortality is one, poor dietary diversity, and hidden hunger, so the fact that many injection drug users may actually be living with undiagnosed micronutrient deficiencies, and certainly there's a lot of scientific evidence that has demonstrated associations between different types of specific nutrient deficiencies and mortality. And secondly, mental health disorders that often go very much undiagnosed and unrecognized, and mental health has consistently been associated both with food insecurity and mortality. So it's difficult, given that we're still in the process of trying to understand what's happening, to make any concrete recommendations, but certainly at the individual level, and this has been emphasized already in the preceding talks, but there's a need to be screening people for their nutritional status, their food security status, and also to be able to ensure that those services are available in the context of HIV treatment, care, harm reduction, mental health services, housing services. Food supplementation is potentially very important, but is not necessarily the advocacy piece that we're focusing on. What we're actually focusing on is the quality of foods, and this has been alluded to here in this panel. But what happens is you have Starbucks saying, "Oh, we're doing great corporate social responsibility," and they'll dump off all of their white sugary scones, or you'll have Dunkin' Donuts come and deliver crates of donuts in this community. So you have actually a population that's consuming tons of carbohydrates and very few fruits and vegetables or protein. Okay, so in terms of further research that we're looking at now, there's really a need for us to understand when we see that the prevalence of food insecurity is so high, what are we actually talking about? And so there's a need for us to be looking at far more rigorous measures. And what we're now doing is we have a national study that's exploring food insecurity among people living with HIV across three of the most populated provinces in Canada. And as part of this, it's what makes this study particularly unique is that it's actually being led by community-based organizations, so over 30 different community-based organizations. We've trained up over 30 peer research assistants, so people living with HIV, from all sorts of backgrounds who are who've been trained to do the interviews and so forth. And we've administered different types of biomarkers and 24-hour dietary recall. So, and the results of which are due imminently. This is my second to last slide, and just wanted to highlight one of our peer research assistants, Valerie Nicholson, who is an incredible inspirational story. And she was an inactive injection drug user for 30 years, saw the vast majority of all her friends die either from HIV or overdoses. And Val is really the headliner of this study and has been has just been going crazy initiating all of these amazing co-ops in every one of the municipalities across British Columbia and Canada. And her experience was that having been on the other end of recipient care, she said, I never want to be the recipient of a hand out. I only want to have a hand up. So she's created a co-op whereby people living with HIV and other chronic diseases can gain access to high-quality, locally grown organic goods. Okay, and this is just to acknowledge all of our various collaborators. Our research is ongoing and now focusing more and more on implementation as our evidence is starting to solidify. And thank you very much.
Thank you.